As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Batter up! Welcome to No Bunts, the show for the casual baseball fan here on the Athletic Podcast Network. From your sports-loving friends over at No Dunks, I'm Tass Mellis. With me is the man making the magic happen, JD.
Hello.
Hello, JD.
Hello. Welcome to my construction zone.
Seriously. that isn't me banging the mic. There are some gentlemen outside doing some work on the windows.
Yeah, they're replacing all the windows and all the siding. And it was supposed to happen last week when we were off or on our off days, and it was raining on those days. So here they are today. It's a beautiful day here in Atlanta.
It is, yeah. Crisp and cool. Perfect for them.
Totally.
Not so perfect for us.
No.
But at the same time, it's the off season, JD. We're all getting better.
Yeah.
We're all working on our games.
That's exactly right.
We're working on the studio. We're working on the house. We've got a photo of it if you're following along on YouTube. If you're part of the Bleacher Creatures, much respect, much appreciated. You're getting a look at the studio / JD's house.
Yeah. Yeah. Getting ripped apart out on the outside.
Listen, we're trying to improve. There's nothing wrong with that.
No.
We've got new microphones here in the studio if you haven't heard. So I don't mind at all. We'll fight through.
Thanks, Tass. Thanks for understanding, and thanks for everyone else out there for understanding.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
So this week you might hear some bangs on a new No Dunks episode that's coming up. We're going to look at the current NBA players and which ones of them are going to be locks. We recorded an Is This Good debating, is 2x speed on a podcast or on watching on YouTube a good thing or not? Mm. You got a No Breaks coming up today, actually, here on Tuesday, discussing the latest race in Italy. And next week, No Buffs is back because Survivor is back. First episode will be on September 22nd, the day after the first episode of Survivor. JD excited. That is great. Looking forward to a new season. This is the most excited I've been for a season in No Buffs.
Really?
Yeah, because I took in last season.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to be better than last season.
I mean, I hope you're right. I enjoyed last season. Mm. We've had back-to-back Canadian winners. Mm. Don't think there's a Canadian on the cast this year. I think they got smart. We're unbeatable. We're undefeated.
Well, today we have Derek Bodner coming on the show to talk about baseball, basketball, drones. We'll be doing that. But before that, let's talk about baseball. Trying to make its game better with a bunch of rule changes. And JD, I got to say, I'm scared. I'm scared about these rule changes because they're so damn good.
Wow.
I'm scared because we may have to do a baseball show all season long.
Okay.
That's the scary part. Because we started the show in July of this year, so we've been going for about 2 months.
Yeah.
Yeah, the scary part to me is I may get into baseball in April and May. Maybe not. I say that now, but maybe not. I'm not saying we're doing a show during the NBA season. I'm just saying that these.
You're saying it could happen.
I'm saying it could happen. I'm getting you ready. Get the construction crew ready. We're going to start back in April. Well, let's get to the rule changes, because I legitimately think that baseball is trying to do something which will help the game. I'll go through them quick, and then we'll go through them one by one. The three big ones are a pitch clock, banning of the shift, and bigger bases. So let's start with that pitch clock. Next season, there will be a time limit on how long a pitcher takes to deliver the ball to home plate. So how long he takes between pitches. That is just going to speed up the game. And I know there are people out there, this is baseball. We don't need clocks in baseball. Well, I don't think it's going to be a big part of the broadcast. If you're watching at home, you're not going to see a clock. It's not a game show. It's just going to be on in the stadium. It's going to be back there. There are clocks already in the stadium for in between innings and how long that takes. So I don't think it's going to be, it's not going to change the presentation of the game that much at all if you're at home. So there's that. That's not a factor to me. The biggest factor is, yes, get excited, construction people here. The biggest factor is that, frankly, it's just going to make the pitcher receive the ball and deliver it back to the catcher even faster. It's literally going to increase the pace of the game. MLB has put out some videos of their minor leagues where they have been doing this the last couple seasons. They've tested in 8,000 games over two seasons, because there are a lot of minor league teams. And I watched a great video of a pitcher in the minor leagues, and then the same pitcher, actually, who came up in the major leagues, and the difference between working with a pitch clock and without a pitch clock. And in a five-pitch sequence, it was about 35 to 40 seconds faster, which doesn't sound like a lot, but it's 7 or 8 seconds per pitch. Which, you know, kind of takes the fans out of it, the pitchers out of it, even the hitters out of it. So, you know, over the course of a game, that accounts for 26 minutes. Right now, baseball is 3 hours and 7 minutes per game. The longest it's ever been in the history of the sport. It's taking that long to play the average baseball game. In the minors, it got shortened by 26 minutes, which brings it to a reasonable like 2 hours and 40 minutes, just because a pitcher gets the ball back, steps on the rubber, toes it, and throws it back to the plate.
Yeah.
Fans want action, and that is literally a huge, huge reason I think that these make sense. I don't really see the downside.
No. More action, less ball scratching.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, I do like to see a pitcher out there fidgeting around and spitting and kicking up the dust.
No, there is absolutely 100% no reason for that. Yeah, occasionally. Listen, I do think one worry is getting to the penalties if a pitcher doesn't throw the ball in time, and that in time is defined by 15 seconds when no one is on base and 20 seconds when there is a runner on base. If there's a violation, if a pitcher takes, let's say, 23 seconds, there is a ball called.
Right.
And in the minor leagues, because we do have some history here, some evidence to go on, there were some infractions, and that definitely declined as the season went along. And as the season went along, after some problems in you know the opening months, each team committed a violation about every fourth game. So it's really not all that much when you think about it that way.
Right.
But you know, a legitimate concern. Managers and players, as written on The Athletic and elsewhere, they have been voicing their concerns sort of in the background as these will take place in 2023. Beforehand, you know, they're discussing what they're concerned about, and they're discussing that, if a ball is called in the eighth inning and it's a 3-2 pitch and our relievers maybe taking 21 seconds or 22 seconds and 23 right. seconds, and the umpires are going to be vigilant, and that could happen where a guy gets a walk because a pitcher took too long. That could happen.
Yeah, but what about like taking away that rule in the eighth inning? You know what I mean? For the rest of the game sort of thing.
Yeah, there's definitely discussions about that. When it is the eighth and the ninth inning, that's totally fair. I think players, coaches, managers, everyone will learn by May, June, July, and August. And there's some leniency, I think, that'll happen in the postseason.
Mm-hmm.
And there's leniency with the rules, actually, in terms of the postseason, how long between innings will take. There are some changes there. But I totally get that. There'll be an adjustment period, I think, after a few months. Teams will get used to it. And, you know, the people are up in arms right now. You're changing our game is the biggest thing. Baseball fans, I think, amongst all fans, are, you know, the most that, hey, we like our.
Yeah.
Yeah, people just going overboard. There's gonna be machines pitching the ball soon. Mm. You know, listen, I just think that this is literally a guy receiving the ball and pitching it faster. And if you watch it and you hear actually former players talk about it, and you watch the game of how it happened in the 80s and the 90s, where, you know, the pitch wasn't thought about as much, it helps the batter as well. Because the batter, actually, this is also part of the rules, JD. I don't want to go crazy into the rules, but part of it is a batter has to also stay in the box and be ready and alert, I think the word is, that they use 8 seconds after the pitcher receives the ball. So,
right.
And if he is not alert, then a strike is called.
Right.
I just think it also, you know, hearing some former players talk about it, it makes the hitters a little bit more aggressive. Just because they're sort of mentally into it. And again, I don't want to harp on basketball being the shortest of the four major sports, but it helps if you can take your game that takes 3 hours and 7 minutes to 2 hours and 40 minutes. That will be wonderful. And I don't really think it changes the essence of the good old ball game. I think it gets back to the essence of it, because
right.
The essence of it is no clocks. We can take as long as we want. But yes, in every interview, every poll, every focus group that the MLB has done, fans want more action. And I don't think this is going to increase injuries amongst pitchers, because that's it's an argument that people have been made. Well, they got to pitch faster.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much R&D going into pitchers. And at this point, pitchers aren't even pitching at 100% at all for every single pitch. They know their bodies so well, and they turn it on and they turn it off, and they're pitching fewer innings now than they ever have in terms of starters. So that's not an issue to me. I think the upside is far, 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 far better.
And coming into this blind, it is a pitcher's game right now, right? Like the technology and the R&D that's going into becoming, you know, a great pitcher, and a four-seam fastball. What's that? I learned about that last week. And the batters are trying to catch up to the pitchers. So if this equals the playing field a little bit and puts the pitchers at a little bit of a disadvantage, that just means more hits and more action for us fans, right?
JD, we didn't plan that segue, but that's a great segue into the next topic. Banning the shift, because that is about leveling the playing field, because the pitchers are so far advanced of the hitters right now. The batting average in Major League Baseball is the lowest it's been since 1968 at .248.
Wow.
They aren't hitting the ball. So this shift that used to have, you know, three guys on one side of the infield plus a short outfielder in short right field quite often, or short left field, is gone. The new rule is two infielders on either side of the base. You can't bring three infielders onto one side anymore. Plus, the other part of the rule is you have to have both your feet on the dirt. So you can't put a guy in short right to take away a long single or a single from a left-handed hitter like they used to do. You have to put him on the dirt. He has to be playing on the dirt. Again, there can be violations and there can be challenges, and that will be the annoying part if there are some. But players are going to learn this part in a snap, and it's going to look so much better. I think it's going to look more like the old ball game. Your shortstop isn't going to be playing on the right side of the bag, and vice versa. It doesn't necessarily take away the hit up the middle, which we've all known in baseball prior to the 2010s when the shift became prominent.
Mm-hmm.
But it will even take that a little bit away. Now, a big argument against this is, listen, if you're a batter, learn to hit the opposite way if they're playing you. Listen, it's been there for so long. The shift has been around for the 2010s. This is about leveling the playing field, giving the batters a chance, because it's the most difficult era to hit.
Right.
Because of how advanced pitching has become. Pitchers are hitting 100 on the gun over and over and over and over again. And that's not necessarily the best pitchers even, but pitchers are becoming so much more lethal with their velocity. They're pitching fewer innings. There's so much R&D. It's about swinging it back the pendulum to the other direction, because strikeouts are at a crazy high rate, 22%, the highest it's ever been. So one of every four or five guys strikes out. Balls just aren't being put in play. So right. The rules have to catch up to the game.
Yeah.
And again, I know it's everyone's sacred game and they have to be concerned about clocks in baseball. guys having to stand on either side of the base. I don't know. It is, to me, I think part of the argument for banning the shift is, it's a little nostalgic for me. I definitely like baseball having a third baseman and shortstop on the left side of second base and vice versa on the other side. But that's not a reason to change it. But a reason to change it is because hitters, again, need to be helped out a little bit. And the other huge, huge reason that MLB has brought up that I didn't really think about a ton is that you will see these players show their athleticism a heck of a lot more now because there's space out there. If you watch the All-Star game where the shift was just, tossed aside because they, it wasn't part of the strategy, there was an incredible play by the Guardian second baseman at the time, Andrés Giménez, going up the middle with a backhand and a flip that he did. That I was sitting with Danielle and she said, is he just showing off because it's an All-Star game? I said, no, they're capable of showing their incredible range of being. These guys are incredible athletes, these middle infielders especially, and now they're going to have the dirt, the field, the space to make that happen. And so you space them out a little bit, it makes more sense. Another argument against this is, well, hitters can't hit. Well, you want to take away the time that a pitcher has to go, scratch himself and kick dirt behind the mound. Well, now the hitters are going to hit, and the time is just going to go up as well. The games are going to be longer as well. I mean, it's a bunch of hooey. It's not going to change all that much. It just gives a hitter a bit of a chance to put one in play. And I think it also changes the approach of a hitter, because this whole three, whatever it's called, the three authentic, three true outcomes is what it's called in baseball, where you're either aiming for a homer or a walk, and you're the singles and doubles type of offense it's kind of not that you don't try for either of those, but average. And small ball isn't part of a lot of teams' offenses. It just doesn't happen as much anymore. And teams like the Cleveland Guardians right now aren't given a real fighter's chance in the postseason because they don't have as many home run hitters. I think because the shift is gone, there will be some more singles, doubles, more balls put in play. And the fans polled, as I mentioned, a lot of polling done by Major League Baseball. The desire for fans is doubles, triples, more action in period, and stolen bases, which brings us to our last point. There are going to be bigger bases, which is something I never, ever thought of, JD. Whenever I played baseball with a firm base, I got really excited instead of those foam squishy ones, because those ones move all around.
Sure.
The firm bases are awesome. That's all I think about when I see a base.
Right.
When I see a baseball base.
So how much bigger are we talking?
We're talking 3 inches on either side. So it's going from...
Significantly.
I don't know if it's significantly. I guess because it's only 15 inches. It was 15 inches, I should say.
Yeah.
In 2023, it will be 18 inches. So... yeah, it's like 20% more, I guess you'd say. So yeah,
our man who stole the stolen base we saw the other night, he would have been safe.
That's a good point.
Like he would have
Vaughn Grissom overslid the base.
Yep, and I think he would have been safe.
You're saying his toe would have still been on there.
He might have crashed into the base. It was so big. Like, it might have stopped him.
Yeah, they're still 90 feet away when you measure the back of the base, like from home plate to the back of the base. But yeah, 3 inches closer. I guess that's actually 4.5 inches closer because it's both bags when you're measuring them, you know, because they're extended each. When we're talking radius diameter of these things. That's not necessarily why they're doing it. The reason that MLB says they're doing it is because there's a reduction in player injury because the bags are bigger. There'll be less collisions at first base. A first baseman can have a little more distance between the runner, even at second base, third base when plays are made. Like you brought up, a guy can slide to either part of the bag, has a little bit more distance. So apparently in the minor leagues, collisions were reduced, or injuries, I should say, were reduced by 13% in terms of collisions.
Wow.
That caused injury. And the stolen base also went up. The stolen base rate, I should say, went up. Right now, in Major League Baseball, there are only 1.35 stolen bases attempted per game.
Wow.
It's not a lot.
No.
Just like one. We were lucky to see a couple happen at the game that we went to. But it's the lowest it's been since the 1950s. Only 1.3, like, combined.
Yeah.
Both teams can only manage, yeah. And those guys excited again out there for the stolen bases.
Roberto, he's very passionate about the stolen bases.
Yeah, combined, yeah. So teams just don't do it, but
I was shocked when we saw the stolen base attempt.
Yeah, gotta love it.
And then I love seeing a guy get picked off. Is that going down as well? Are people just not trying to pick off a runner?
JD, great questions you're asking. We didn't plan this at all, but very great questions you're asking. It's interesting because when I was thinking about the pitch clock, I didn't bring this rule up because we'd get too deep into the rules. But with the pitch clock, they're also limiting the amount of times you can pick off a guy, to pick off a guy. They're calling them disengagements. You can only have two disengagements per at-bat. Disengagements are classified as stepping off.
Right.
You know, to take your time and do whatever you got to do. Or pickoffs. So I thought, okay, so if you only have two pickoff attempts per at-bat, let's say Vaughn Grissom is on first base.
Yeah.
You throw over twice. So does that mean he's just going to have a huge lead and just run over to second? Well, no, you can throw over a third time. But if you don't get the runner out, if you don't pick him off, then a balk is called and the runner advances.
So it's a free base.
Yes. So if you can throw over a third time. So if a guy is way off the bag, you think you can pick him off, you can throw over, but the risk is a balk will be called if it's an unsuccessful attempt.
Wow.
So that's why there should be more stolen bases. It did go up in the minor leagues. Not a crazy amount, but baseball wants to get back to like your early 2000s even when Ichiro Suzuki was stealing like 60 bases approximately. So a little bit, swing the pendulum back a little bit. Increased base size, pitch clock, and banning of the shift. I don't think it's going too far. I think in summary, I think it's entirely fine to have a guy, planted on one side of the base when we're talking about banning of the shift. I think it's all good news, JD. It's all fairly good news. Yeah, agreed. And there has been much made in the past of different rules that have come up in Major League Baseball. I remember the catcher rule that used to be a catcher could just stand wherever he wanted. Well, now he can't block the path of a runner coming in to avoid the collisions at home plate. People were up in arms about that. I remember reading a George Brett quote saying, "I hate it. I love crashing into the catcher." But now people don't care about it. People don't think twice. The intentional walk, where you used to have to throw four balls outside. Well, now you just say, "Hey, we're walking the guy, go away." So those things are all good. So that's that. Before we get to Derek Bonner, I wanted to give you some rapid-fire news from Major League Baseball. This will be quick. The Dodgers became the first team to clinch a postseason berth. Or wait, did they? It was funny. On Sunday, it was deemed that they had clinched the spot. But MLB said Monday morning, actually, you know what? Nah, there are a lot of tiebreakers. They didn't actually clinch, but Monday they won, and they're all good.
They checked their math.
Yeah. Well, no. They won on Monday, and so they're actually in, and there's no worries about it whatsoever. So, yeah, it just took them an extra day. They are the best team in baseball. They are rolling. Albert Pujols also rolling, 697 home runs.
Damn.
Saturday and Sunday, ding, ding, back-to-back games, back-to-back jacks. He is now fourth all-time, just trailing Aaron, Bonds, and the Babe, who have hit 700-plus. He passed Alex Rodriguez for fourth of all-time. Will he do it? About 20 games left. It's not a lock by any means, so that is very interesting to watch. Speaking of homers, Mike Trout of the Angels has homered in seven straight games. One away from the record. That record is shared by Griffey, Mattingly, and Dale Long way back in 1956. So Mike Trout had the back problems. I bring him up because the Angels aren't playing relevant baseball, but seven straight games is very impressive. He's one of the best players in baseball. Yeah, give it up for Mike Trout. I bring it up because the Angels are not relevant right now. They got younger at the deadline. Shohei Ohtani isn't going to stay there after next offseason. What about Mike Trout? Do they trade Mike Trout? I think that's a fair question to ask. Also, we saw some great games. Braves-Mariners, one of the wildest games on Sunday. Mariners were up 6-2 in the ninth. Braves down to their last out, their last strike. And because of the new pitch clock rule, there was a walk. Now, the pitch clock rule doesn't take into effect until 2023. But Michael Harris hit a three-run ding-dong at 6-5. Then Robbie Grossman hit one up, hit a two-run homer. So they're up 7-6, but the Mariners, they did their thing in the bottom of the ninth. Two solo home runs for a walk-off win. That was great. Bo Bichette is scorching for the Toronto Blue Jays as they cruise into September here, which is pretty exciting. 20 games left. Playoffs will start on October 7th. So as we get closer to the playoffs, we'll be talking more and more about the games and obviously all about the games in the postseason. But right now, you know, we're taking it easy here with the hardcore talk. I'm not sure how much we'll get into hardcore Phillies talk with Derek Bodner, but we will talk about the Phillies with him, about how he looks like a big dweebus when he flies a drone, and a whole lot more. But we got to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Welcome back to No Bunts. With us now is Derek Bodner, who has been writing about the Philadelphia 76ers for over a decade, formerly of The Athletic. Now he's doing his own thing at The Daily Six newsletter, which you should check out. Good deals going on right now. If you love the Philadelphia 76ers, you will love the Daily Six newsletter. Derek, thank you so much for joining No Bunts.
Yeah, it's my pleasure.
I really appreciate you coming on. People may be thinking, Derek Bodner on a baseball podcast? What the heck is going on? I'll give you a quick background of how this happened. I was tweeting about the 30th anniversary of the 92 World Series, Braves and Jays, and Derek replied, well, it was a lot better than the next World Series where the Jays beat the Phillies. And then I saw you write that experience, watching the Jays beat the Phillies, set you up for life and being a Philadelphia sports fan. It just got you ready for that. So tell me a little bit about that. How did it set you up?
Yeah, I mean, look, the Joe Carter home run is definitely, if you're a Philadelphia fan, a Phillies fan, it will be etched in your memory for the rest of your life. And that was right at the age for me where I was really getting into sports. Baseball at that time was probably my number one sport. It was certainly the one that I bonded with my father over the most. We had a partial season ticket plan. And to watch that team in 93 that we came in with no expectations whatsoever to get so close only for, you know, one of, I guess, if you're from a different vantage point, one of the most incredible home runs in baseball history. It was very climatic. It was very heartbreaking. It was, it taught me very much that things can change in an instant. And that you're, what can go from pure elation can just be complete devastation. That was a tough one to get through, especially since Philadelphia, we ended up not winning a championship in the city across all four sports for what, another 15 years after that. Didn't have a whole lot of teams that even really got close. So that was a tough one to go through. And that was when I think the first time I had my heart broken as a fan, the first time of many. But the further I got back away from that, it was a great ride up to that point. Like I said, it was something that none of us even in the city expected. It was something they weren't able to replicate even after the strike there. After that, they just never got back to that. It was a flash in the pan, but it was very devastating as a fan. Very, very devastating at the time.
Well, I'm curious to know how big of a Phillies fan are you now? Did you sit through a 3.5 hour rain delay on Sunday for that game?
No, I did not. In all honesty, I think covering the NBA, I'm less of a fan of the other sports just from sheer time perspective.
I hear you.
Growing up, the Phillies were huge. I mean, it was a sport that I was best at playing. And I think whenever you play a sport, there's a little stronger of a connection to it.
Mm.
It was the sport that I bonded with my father the most. It was one that he was the most into. It was, you know, we had a partial season ticket plan for a while there. After I graduated college, I had a partial season ticket plan while I lived in Philly. In fact, I was at game 5 of the 2008 World Series. I was very invested in there. In one way, it was sort of the Phillies and baseball were sort of my last hurrah as a normal fan, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you start covering a sport, and I really realize this in a weird way, it's another Toronto situation, but I really realized how much the fandom had been beaten out of me when the Kawhi shot went in. And I'm up there in Toronto covering the game for the Athletic, and you don't really feel the way you feel as a fan. It's, how am I going to get home? How am I going to cover this event? What does this mean for me in terms of exit interviews? And you're worried about all of those logistical details. And I think that was when I really realized that fandom had beaten out of me. Well, the Phillies and that 08 run where they did finally win it, where I was there, I actually have the ticket behind me. It's still displayed in my office. That was sort of like my last hurrah as a fan, because a year after that, 2009, is when I started covering the NBA draft. And it just changed so much of my perspective on sports and how I think about sports and how I cover sports that it will always have a very strong place in my heart. Do I still watch Phillies? Yeah. Do I sit through a 3.5 hour delay? No, I have better things to do with my life at this point. But it is, baseball will always have a special place for me.
Well, that's a very long delay. Let's be honest. 3.5 hours is a lot for any human to sit through. But it's funny you mentioned that era of going back to 08, 09, because the Phillies surprisingly haven't made the playoffs since 2011. And it sounds like, I don't know if you can hear this, that like we're at a stadium right now cheering. There's cheering going on. There's celebrations going on because I said the Phillies haven't made the playoffs since 2011. There's some Philly fans out there, I guess, banging on this house, doing some construction. But 2011 is the last time that they got there. And as you said, things can change very quickly. But I will say they're in a very good position to make the postseason. They would actually line up with the Atlanta Braves, our new adopted team here. Currently, they would be the 4-5 matchup. Is there any excitement level in you, especially considering it's the off season here for basketball? Are you watching Edmundo Sosa go headfirst into first base? There's some exciting stuff happening on this Phillies team. Any excitement level for this potential playoff run here?
Oh, sure. No, there's a good amount of excitement, both from my own perspective and in the city. You know, I think the Phillies over the last couple of years have had some pretty notable September collapses. So I think we were all sort of like, I don't want to say we weren't buying in, but there's a little bit of skepticism, or at least just bracing ourselves for what has happened here over the last couple of years. A lot of debate over someone like Aaron Nola and whether or not he can hold up throughout the whole season, whether or not you're going to get enough from him. I still think there's, you know, I think Philly is pretty optimistic right now, but we know that could change very quickly. But you know, I mean, this has been I think when Bryce Harper went down, everyone's expectations took a huge hit. And I, you know, they were maybe a couple games over 500. They weren't really in a playoff run. And then they went in on an incredible run without him and put them in a spot. I think, especially with the coaching change and the, you know, a lot of the younger players stepping up, I think there's a lot of optimism here. And I think everyone will look at them and say, well, are they good enough to make a run? Who knows? Like, this is year one of getting back in the playoffs. Baseball is weird. You know, I remember going back when there was, you know, the eight playoff teams and doing a, I was looking at it and it's like, well, if you took at the teams that were great offenses, great pitching staffs, great fielding teams, teams that ended hot, everyone pretty much had about a 1 in 8 chance of winning. Baseball is so weird where there's just so, it's so hard to, playoffs don't actually do a great job of determining the best team. So once you get in, you have a real chance. But I think a lot of people are still realizing that this is maybe not a complete team, but there's just a lot of excitement because like you said, they haven't been in the playoffs in over a decade, which is sometimes tough to do in baseball. There's been a lot of frustration from then to now. But yeah, I think there's a lot of excitement over this team.
Yeah, and with the expanded postseason, six spots in each postseason, that definitely riles up some fan bases. I'm sure it's riling up the Philadelphia fan base currently because they're in a very good spot. They're up 3.5 on the Brewers, who are the team, you know, outside the wild card position, 4.5 technically with the tiebreakers. I mean, I'm getting into tiebreakers here, Derek. I didn't think I would be doing that covering baseball, but yeah, they're currently 4.5 up. A lot of weird stuff also with this wild card situation, because if you're in a race like the Braves are to win the division, they could be pitching their best pitchers down the stretch each and every game, while the Phillies could have their position locked up, and then you have a three-game wild card series. Could be Braves-Phillies, where the Phillies could be in a better spot in terms of their rotation than the Braves, which is a little scary for a team trying to win one of those top two buys, trying to win the division and get the buy over the Mets. So Phillies could be in a good spot, although, you know, Bryce Harper, coming back. There's weird stuff there positionally with Edmundo Sosa. Zach Wheeler is out. But just moving on to You Are Everything Philadelphia, looking at your Instagram page, you went to a Hustle pre-screening.
Sure.
That we discussed earlier. We did a film session on the movie Hustle, which was a fantastic movie. How was that experience seeing Adam Sandler, Tobias Harris up on stage?
Yeah, well, it was a little funny because it was right around that time where you didn't 100% know whether or not Tobias would you didn't 100% know the reception Tobias would receive and whether he'd still be a team. It was right there at the beginning of free agency when that premiered. But yeah, it was a fun event. I'd love to say I sat here and chatted up with Adam Sandler. That didn't happen. That's fine. And you know what? I give it 1 star because they didn't offer me any kind of cameo in the movie. That's my only real complaint about the movie. But it was a pretty, you know, I could sit here and it's funny because everyone asked me that I know, like, how realistic is it? And it's like, well, they got pretty much everything about the draft process wrong. But I think they got the essence of a lot of the job right, and I think it was entertaining. It was like a basketball spin on Rocky. It was a fun, well done movie for what it was. The premiere was fun. It was great to see a bunch of people that maybe I hadn't seen in a while, especially since the world has been so weird here over the last couple of years. But no, it was an enjoyable movie, an enjoyable event. I think they did a good job with it, and I'm glad the seemed like a lot of Sixers players and staff members had some fun with it too. So it was fun all around.
Were there any media cameos in the movie?
There was Anthony Gargano. He is a radio host on a local radio station. That's the only one I can think of off the top of my head, but there was at least one, yeah.
Oh, okay. All right, so you deserve to feel a little bit bitter. I get it.
I mean, look, I'm completely self-centered, and my rating of the movie is dependent on what it did for me, and it didn't do enough.
Didn't get you there. What was totally wrong about the draft process in the movie? Now I'm going into a film session, but do you remember offhand what was entirely incorrect?
Yeah, I mean, I think they said that the Sixers had a chance to sign him and they declined to, so then he entered the draft. That's, you know, you have to go through the draft before any team can sign you. That was one big, you know, they basically had to find a way to set the Sixers up as sort of like the early movie villain. And they just kind of like created something out of thin air.
Okay.
But I did appreciate that the GM was very reminiscent of maybe a Sixers nepotistic GM who was handed the franchise and wasn't a very, very likable player or person. So I did appreciate that greatly.
Yeah. Was there any Brian Colangelo flashbacks at that moment? Was he wearing a high collar? I don't even remember. But
no, I don't remember him wearing a high collar. But yeah, they definitely painted him to be the villain. And I think a lot of, whether or not they intended that to be the case, I think a lot of Philadelphia fans made that connection for sure.
Well, checking out your IG page, it sparked a question in me because we have a show here on the No Dunks Network called Is This Good? We debate random things and whether they're good or not. Camping has come up recently. You were camping with your bros a while back. So just a general question. Camping, is it good?
Oh, no. I think it's very good. I enjoy it quite a bit. It's one instance where me and my two brothers, we get to go out there. We do it pretty much every year. It's like a combination camping and mountain biking and kayaking and that sort of thing. And it's one way that the three of us just sort of get away from everything, away from the rest of the family, away from our jobs and responsibilities, away from the world. I enjoy it a bit. I enjoy just the general outdoors. You know, it was, I guess, a little over a year ago. I drove back from Vegas from the Summer League just to sort of explore all of the national parks in Utah and get a drive across country and do all that stuff. So that's kind of right up my alley anyway. But yeah, camping I think is wonderful. I don't know if I can do it for more than like 4 or 5 days. I think that's probably about my limit. There is certainly a point where it gets to be too much of a hassle and a burden. But just a couple days out in nature, I enjoy it. Yeah.
Yeah. How much on the glamping side do you go? Do you need to shower? Do you need?
Oh, I do shower. Yeah. There's a place that we drive to. I won't say down the road, but probably about 20 minutes away where we shower. I would not be able to survive, I don't think, without feeling a little bit cleaner than all the grime I get on me in camping.
That's
100% shower. Yeah.
That's where you draw the line.
Yeah.
I'm exactly at that point with you. I do enjoy a few days. And then, yeah, I wonder if it just kind of gets to me, I guess.
Sort of like Vegas. I can do Vegas for a couple days, and then you got to get out because it's too much. It's overbearing.
It's like Vegas, but the exact opposite.
But the feeling of it in terms of having a deadline is definitely there.
Yeah, you love
it. I remember the first year I went out to Vegas Summer League and went out there for like 8 days, and it's like, that's way too much.
Oh,
there's no way this is ever happening again.
You're preaching to the choir. We used to do 11 straight shows, so we were there for like, you know, if we sandwiched it 12-13 days, and God, I just feel drained talking about it. That's not what any human should be doing. It was we were even put at the beginning into a hotel which was somewhat off the strip and didn't have a casino, so it really didn't feel like Vegas when
right.
we woke up, when we, you know, went down in the elevator. The whole experience wasn't Vegas, but still.
Yeah,
it just seeped in.
Yes, it does.
Everything does seep in. You do love the outdoors. I saw you do a lot of drone filming and photography. And if you're on YouTube, we're showing you a photo of Derek wearing his drone goggles, I guess they're called. And I know you keep mentioning every time you post a photo that you like doing it, but you always look like a huge dork while you do it. Can you tell us about the whole drone experience? Because I think you get some great footage. It looks extremely cool, but at the other end, do you avoid anyone seeing you because of those those huge VR type goggles that you're wearing?
I think I've given up on trying to look cool anyway, so that's fine. That's fine. I would not have posted that if I was too worried about how I look.
Right.
I got into it. I actually just took them down for this shoot. But I have probably 7 or 8 drones. And some of them are like DJI, like camera drones. Some of them are more like freestyle and racing drones. Some of them are long range, flying up and down a mountain. I'd like to do a lot of sometimes just flying and stunts, and some of them can hit like 100 miles an hour. And I like to do a lot of them for, you know, pictures and videography and that kind of stuff, cinematography drones. I have a good little fleet going. It is one of the few hobbies that I have kept up over the last couple of years. It's fun. There's a sense of speed. I've always wanted to go skydiving. I enjoy heights. I enjoy the feeling of flying, and this is a way to do it without killing myself, which seems like a good compromise. But mostly I would say it's probably for the cinematography, trying to create some kind of videos and content out of it. Not that I post any of it because I'm not good enough at it, but it's it's fun. There's a lot of different ways to approach it in terms of cameras and photos. There's just, it's a way to take pictures that you never otherwise could have. It's a fun hobby that I enjoy.
So you do get a sense of speed from it. You do get that feeling.
Oh yeah. No, I mean, like I said, I have one that can probably hit, I've never tested it, but I could probably hit about triple digits on it. And because you have it with the goggles, with the FPV, there's all kinds of races and I'm not good enough to do it, but there's all kinds of races where you compete against other people. It is a, cool. It's one of my bigger hobbies for sure.
I think we should get you, if the Phillies face the Braves here, we should get you part of the broadcast, because I think you could add something with your filming. Do you consider yourself a bit of a thrill seeker? Because I did also see in 2019, I think you mentioned that Sixers-Toronto series. You're in Toronto, CN Tower. Yes, that edge walk that we're showing you a photo of, where you're literally hanging above the city of Toronto with a harness, but you're free. You're out in the open air. How was that experience?
Yeah, I mean, that was high. That was definitely high. I wouldn't say I'm afraid of heights. And I think with that one specifically, I had enough faith that I was able to. There's just something to me about, in terms of thrill seeking, about your everything in your mind telling you not to do it and doing it anyway. And I think that's what I get out of heights and sort of challenging that fear. That was a gorgeous view. I remember sitting up in my hotel during the course of that series, and it was, you know, maybe a fourth of the height, but just looking at it and looking at the skyline of Toronto and the coastline and how beautiful it was. I think that's probably when I talked myself into doing that one specifically, the CN Tower, just because I wanted to get a real good view of it. And I think that height is, it adds, it's gorgeous. Like I said, there's something about conquering your fears, or at least doing something that your brain is telling you not to do, that I enjoy. I probably enjoy heights probably more than a lot of people. I think that's probably fair. There's some thrill seeking aspect to it for sure. And that's the same with the thing with flying too. Because it is first person, because you do have the goggles on, you can get a lot of thrill out of that for sure. And I think when I, maybe the first time I really noticed that, I took it out to Vegas a couple years ago, and flying up and down Red Rock Canyon, and flying through the mountains. I think that was probably my first passion in terms of drone flying. So yeah, I would say height and thrill seeking is a part of it.
Oh, that sounds cool. Was it so scary that you cried like Joel Embiid did at the end of that Sixers-Raptors series? I'm a jerk. I got no problem with Joel Embiid crying. There's nothing wrong with crying. That was an incredible series when you look back. I almost wish I was a pure fan. Would I choose my career path versus being a fan for that one moment? Of course I'd choose my career path. But that was a ridiculous moment. I was in awe of that four bouncer moment. Anything else that you remember other than trying to get the heck out of the Air Canada Center, Scotiabank Arena?
That's probably the one instance. I think there's a lot of instances where I regret losing the pure fandom. That's probably one where I'm glad that I was in the media and I didn't have to focus on what would be a pretty traumatic experience. Because I still have, like, my one brother is a pretty big basketball fan. He's a Philly fan. And watching the devastation on him it made me realize what I avoided. That was a tough one for a lot of people. One of the toughest, I think, just because of the sheer absurdity of it. I'll never forget standing there, sitting there in the upper bowl, watching that shot go in and watching it hit. And I think it was probably about the third bounce where it really hit me that's going in. It was absurd. I remember after, because there was a Mark Stein report that Brett Brown was going to be fired if he lost the series. And I remember meeting a bunch of the coaching staff and the way they reacted. And I firmly believe that they thought they were going to get fired. It very much felt like they were saying their goodbyes. I'll always remember that. It was a truly fantastic series. That was a well-played series on both ends. I think that was a competitive series. I think that was maybe the best playoff series the Sixers have played during the Joel Embiid era. It's sort of a shame that it ended the way that it did. But it was one where you just really have to tip your hat to Kawhi and to Nurse and to the Raptors. And it was an extremely well-played series. It's probably one of the highlights of my career covering the team. Not highlights for Philadelphia fans, but highlights in terms of what I got to witness.
And I'll just ask you one question about the Sixers before we go. Additions this offseason, PJ Tucker, Montrezl Harrell, De'Anthony Melton. I know you just wrote about the addition of Montrezl Harrell, which was recent. James Harden took a pay cut. Just general thoughts of the Philadelphia 76ers going into a big season.
Yeah, I think they're well positioned to the way I've been phrasing it the entire time. If James Harden has a bounce back year and is more, maybe not the James Harden of, let's say, 2020 when he was an MVP candidate, but somewhere in between where he was last year and where he was back then, the Sixers now have the depth and the pieces to capitalize on that. And I think what they did, and if you look at their roster, probably their fifth through eighth most important players were all added this offseason. And all in part because James Harden was willing to take that pay cut. We'll see what that means on his next contract. But because he was willing to take that pay cut, they were able to add their depth. And because they were able to get that De'Anthony Melton trade and then make those signings, and because the Montrezl Harrell situation played out the way that they did, they are a much, much, much deeper team. They have way more two-way players, way more two-way wings. They have more shooting. They have more defense. I think they are a much better team. I'm not sure any of that really matters if James Harden looks the way he did last year against the Heat, and I think that's going to be the key to the season. But like I said, if James Harden has a bounce back year, they now have the pieces and the depth and the defense and the two-way players that they can capitalize on that. And I think that's important. I think it's probably about the most Daryl Morey could have done in this offseason. He can't turn back the clock and make James Harden into who he was 5 years ago. That's going to rest on James. But they're a much better team. I expect them to be among the top three teams in the Eastern Conference. You know, you obviously have the Bucks and the Celtics, who I think you would put. I think the Sixers probably have similar level upside to them, but I think you're more confident in the Bucks and the Celtics. Outside of that, I think the Sixers are above pretty much everyone else. And if you look at the NBA as maybe having, you know, I think one of the things we talked about with baseball that's great is that once you get in the playoffs, you have, regardless of how good of a team, how complete of a team, you have a chance just because of the randomness of baseball and the shortness of a playoff series. In basketball, it's a little different. You don't really see all that many times where teams come out of nowhere to make a run to the NBA Finals. If you were to pick the top five or six teams that have a real legitimate shot of winning the championship, I think the Sixers are in there. But I think it's going to be James Harden that's going to determine whether or not they have a realistic chance or whether they're more pretenders.
Yeah, I wonder if the East, excuse me, is a little bit more like baseball than basketball has been in the past. And I say that because you mentioned the Sixers. You could easily see the Sixers coming out of the Eastern Conference. The Celtics are there. The Bucks are there. And, yep. You know, the Miami Heat should be part of that category. And then there's, you know, some tier two teams. But it feels like, as it always does this time of year, that there's more teams that could make it than not. But I do think the Sixers should be a part of that conversation. I am a big De'Anthony Melton fan, but you're right. It does probably it does lay on what Harden can do and how fresh it keeps him beat as well. Just the fact if Harden puts on a little bit more on his shoulders going into the playoffs and if he performs.
And I think that's one thing we've seen Joel Embiid take a minor step back here defensively over what he was earlier in his career. And I think part of it's just that he has to carry so much. I don't think anybody really saw him at the beginning of his career developing into a 30-point-per-game scorer, a league-leading scorer. Now that he doesn't have to do quite as much, both because of Harden and the development of Maxey, I think you could get a better defensive version of Joel Embiid, something maybe a little more akin to the 2017 version of Embiid. And I think that will help, especially since they have way more perimeter defenders than they've had pretty much at any time throughout his career. So I think they should be a very good defensive team. The question is whether Harden's offense will elevate them to where it needs to be. It'll be a fun season, sure.
Well, thanks, Derek. I appreciate you coming on, your insight. You can catch Derek's coverage of the Philadelphia 76ers at the Daily Six newsletter. Thank you so much for coming on today.
Yeah, pleasure, anytime.
All right. We got to take a quick break, but after this short break, a tweet worthy of the crown. We'll be right back.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Welcome back to No Bunts. Yeah, we don't really lay him down here on the show. No bunting, but we do hit dingers like this next tweet.
Tweet of the night. Wow.
Twitter.
Yeah, I like the big setups now, JD.
I was expecting you to say tweet of the night. I know. So I was waiting. And
yeah, but we hear tweet of the night.
Yeah, you're right. No. I liked it. You did was great. I just hesitated and
I pointed as well.
I wasn't looking at you.
Oh well, I thought you could see me partially.
Yeah,
there's a lot of equipment in front of you.
Yeah, there's a lot happening.
There's a lot happening. But I didn't want to repeat it. I always repeat myself, especially going into break. So I've got to take a quick break. But after this break, there's a break.
Fair enough.
I didn't want to repeat it. Also, it isn't the best setup because it really makes it seem like I tweeted it or one of the No Dunks crew tweeted it. I said, we hit dingers. I can't take credit for this amazing tweet from Lindsay Adler of The Athletic. She writes about those darn Yankees, and she tweeted something she wrote after a Yankees-Jays game a year ago, which related to Queen Elizabeth II. This is what she wrote. In Canada, the Queen is on the currency. For the Yankees on Tuesday night, Michael King was on the money.
Wow.
Yes. Now, it's not a very current... Again, this is a tweet of 2021, really, but Lindsay Adler tweeted because Queen Elizabeth II passed. And, yeah, she tweeted her old lead to an article on The Athletic, which, if you're not subscribing to The Athletic, if that doesn't get you to subscribe, I don't know what will. TheAthletic.com/NoDunks. $1 a month for the next 6 months. Get you in there. If I didn't get you in there with Lindsay Adler's, in Canada, the Queen is on the currency. For the Yankees on Tuesday night, Michael King was on the money. Darn good. I was just in Canada, JD.
Yeah.
Obviously, the flags flying at half-mast. Mm-hmm. Queen died at 96. I was at my man Ryan Seton's wedding.
Yes.
And one of the first people on the dance floor was grandmother of Loren, the bride, who is 94.
Wow.
And she was phenomenal. She was basically the only one on the dance floor I think she was dancing during dinner or during times when you weren't really supposed to be, one was dancing, but she was
happy.
Yeah. Granddaughter got married.
Great-granddaughter or granddaughter?
No, granddaughter.
Wow.
Yeah, 94. Yeah, she was going.
Nice.
Good time. Good times were had. Congrats to Loren and Ryan. A very, 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 very good time to be back.
I'm going tomorrow.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Whew, you're going to love it. I don't know if you're coming back, JD. I'll say it right now.
But because of the nightmare at Pearson or just because
no,
it's so wonderful?
No, not because of that. It's Canada.
Yeah.
That's the biggest reason.
Yeah.
Second biggest reason, weather is just too good right now. Yeah, you're going to love it.
It's the perfect time.
Yeah, I didn't run into any airport problems, so no, I don't think that'll be a part of your calculation.
Great to hear.
Yeah, I'm calling it now. You're not coming back. Air quotes, okay. There were problems at the airport. you'll be gone, but there'll still be shows being produced here from the factory.
Of course.
Yes. There's a No Dunks coming up, No Breaks coming up, mm-hmm. which you can find on its own feed. Is This Good in the feed? Next week, No Buffs has its own feed. And one last thing before we go here. From one of the bleacher creatures, the term we use for people watching live on YouTube, Kojak said, what's the over-under for bangs on the pod? I got 35. It was way more than that.
Way more. So much more. What's worse, the saw or the bangs?
I gotta go bangs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, listen back. I probably won't be able to bring myself to listen back to this one.
No, because we just got rid of the table bangs problem with the new microphones, which sound phenomenal.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't even make that bang sound, but then they were replaced. It was a nice little nostalgic throwback to a week ago before we implemented these new mics.
Yeah.
So anyway, if you want to be part of the Bleacher Creatures or the stream team, join us. YouTube.com/NoDunksInc. But for now, Clipper Bros.
You heard it here first. Have a great time. Turn up. Love you guys. Awesome.
Thanks for joining us. And remember, as I said earlier in the show, average Major League Baseball game, 3 hours and 7 minutes. They're trying to shorten that with the new rules, which they will do. And then the sport that will become the longest of the four major sports, and by those I'm talking about hockey, basketball, football, or baseball, will be which one, JD?
Football?
You better believe it. Come on, let's go, baseball. Let's do it. Hit it out of the park. And you did with these new rules. Really enjoyed it. All right, we'll see you next time.